American Air Force has a budget of 20. So, thank you, David. Thank you, Peter. It's a delight to be back here in Melbourne, and indeed to see the front row half full of my family. It's very nice to see my uncle and my two first cousins sitting down here. So, space science in Europe. I'm going to tell you something about what I do, and it's certainly a very exciting job that I have. I work for something called the European Space Agency, ESA. It's a bit like NASA, but actually we've got a bigger responsibility than NASA and a much smaller budget. That's exactly the wrong way round. We have astronauts, we do space technology. This is Smart One with a solar electric propulsion engine I'll tell you a little about later. We do space science. This is the Orion Nebula, which is seen in infrared light, and so you're looking at planets forming there. But we also do the things on the bottom here. We build rockets. NASA is about to start building rockets again, but it hasn't built rockets for many years. The American Air Force, which is actually, believe it or not, the space agency that has the biggest budget in the world. The American Air Force has a budget of $23 billion, that's American dollars, a year, builds the big rockets for the United States at the moment. If America goes back to the moon, NASA will go back into the rocket building business. We build Ariane 5, and we build two other smaller rockets, Soyuz and Vega. But then also, we've got two other examples here of the kind of thing we have to look after, which our American counterparts don't have to do. One is looking at the Earth from space, and in particular, developing applications, aspects of looking at the Earth. And I'll come to that at the end of the talk. That really is a very important reason to go into space, to look back at the Earth. And indeed, not just to do science, but also to then learn how to apply that science to manage the planet we live on better. And then the other kind of application that we do is we build both telecom demonstrators, not much of that because that's more or less a commercial market now. You don't need government money to do that. But we're building a navigation system. Probably some of you have GPS in your cars. That's an American military system. It's fine for navigating your cars because if, for instance, the American military decided to take it away from you, you would still be able to read street signs, and probably you haven't forgotten how maps work. If you're using a navigation system, a satellite navigation system to land civilian aircraft, it's not that simple. You have to have civilian control. So in Europe, we're developing the Galileo system, which we're doing in the next few years. We've already launched one spacecraft, another spacecraft to come sometime next year, and then a constellation that will provide a navigation system like GPS, but fully under civilian control. That, of course, is where we sort of have to take over and compete with the American Air Force. And again, that's also, of course, where America gets a lot of its surveillance information, even about environmental issues, is from military technology. Okay, so ESA stands for European Space Agency, but also for exploration, applications, and the S in the middle of the sandwich is what I'm in charge of, that is science. For me, science is at the root of all our capabilities. Science underpins engineering, and also it underpins wealth. And that's very important in a developed country like Australia, just as it is in a developed country like Great Britain or like France, where I live right now. I've got a lot of spacecraft flying now, and this I'm quite proud of. I'm going to put them all up, and I'll say a little bit about them. If I've been giving this talk, actually I did give a talk in Melbourne about 12 years ago. And 12 years ago when I talked here, I wasn't the director of science, but I was then chairman of the Science Program Committee, I think, of ESA. And I gave a talk at the University of Melbourne. And at that time, I think we had 3 spacecraft in operations. Now I've lost count, but I think it's about 18. They range from Integral, which is a joint mission between Europe and Russia. It started even when Russia was still the Soviet Union, and we managed to complete the cooperation during all of the rather chaotic transition from the Soviet Union to the present Russia. That's looking at gamma rays. Gamma rays are the most energetic particles of light you can have. And next to it is another mission looking at very energetic light, Newton. Newton looks at X-rays. Now, gamma rays and X-rays you cannot see directly on the surface of the Earth. You have to go into space, and these observatories, we are unique in having both a gamma ray imaging and spectroscopic observatory and an X-ray observatory flying at the same time. They tell us about the most extreme events in our universe, about black holes, about the death of stars. Stars explode as they die, and they emit gamma rays and X-rays. On the face of it, it's rather a morbid study, the death of things. But actually, let me console you by telling you, in your bodies right now, you have heavy elements. I mean, you don't have too many of them. They're a bit poisonous, but they are part of your makeup. If you've got anything heavier than iron, it was made in the death of a star. And you're carrying it around with you right now. In that respect, you're all stardust. And of course, you knew that anyhow, because you know that the material you're made of largely existed before the Earth existed, and therefore you can only have come out of the stars. Going on, with the Americans, we still share Hubble. We provide 15% of the operations staff for Hubble. In fact, on my way here, I came through the United States to visit my staff working in Baltimore. Another program with the Americans is Ulysses. It's a solar spacecraft flying in a polar orbit over the sun. It's still flying. In fact, when I came here to Melbourne in 1994, it was relatively young. It had just been launched not long before. Well, it's still flying. I don't know what we're going to do. We'll have to turn it off in the end, I think. It's really been a wonderful mission. There, the operations are actually done from the United States by a team of Europeans using the American Deep Space Network. And they're based in California. Smart One, this is our baby spacecraft. It died at the beginning of September this year. You may have noticed it crashed into the moon. And indeed, it's a technology demonstrator. It was built really to learn how to use new types of propulsion in space. I'll say a little bit about that later. Rosetta, launched in 2004, doesn't get to the place it's going until 2014. It's already flown past the Earth, and indeed on February the 25th of next year, it'll fly past Mars. And in fact, also in October of next year, it'll fly past Mars again. It's not going to Mars deliberately. It's using its flybys to kick itself further out in the solar system. It's eventually going out to the orbit of Jupiter, where it's going to rendezvous with a comet called Chermov-Gerasimenko. I'll ask you to spell it later. The front row will do it, don't worry. It's going to comet Chermov-Gerasimenko, and you may remember the American Deep Impact mission, which where the Americans drove a spacecraft into a comet, and there was a big explosion. We're sort of more touchy-feely in our approach to cometary science. We're going to go gently into orbit around Chermov-Gerasimenko and drop a little lander onto the surface. And the lander will scratch and sniff the surface. It really is touchy-feely. Of course, the two approaches are complementary to each other. It's just you get there a lot faster if you don't have to stop when you arrive, which is why the Americans launched about the same time as us, and their mission is already over. And what a bang, it was over with.